But because of the guilt and shame that's kind of associated with it, a lot of people won't go to the doctors, won't reach out for help. And it's actually estimated that 1 in 50 people could experience binge eating in their life.
The way our culture talks about eating, quote unquote, too much or overeating, places a lot of guilt and shame over such a normal human experience. This can mean we experience behaviors such as binge eating in secrecy or with a sense of failure and guilt surrounding it. It can also mean we get stuck focusing on trying to change the eating experience itself. But as Tony and I will discuss, binge eating has much less to do with the eating moment and more to do with our general self-care and our food and body beliefs outside of this moment. So you're listening to the Food and Life Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Emma Townsend, a UK registered dietitian and a certified intuitive eating counselor. I support you to move away from lifelong dieting, emotional eating, and other stressful eating to develop a positive relationship with food and connection with your body. And just a reminder that we are all unique, so please do use this as an opportunity to learn and explore. But if something does not sit with you, then it's not meant for your unique self. And of course, if you have any health concerns or you're worried you have an eating disorder, please do seek personalized support from a registered healthcare provider. Today's guest is Tony Rudd. Tony is a binge eating specialist dietitian from the UK who works online with women all over the world to support them with binge eating and letting go of the diet cycle. Tony, a huge welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
You're very welcome. So I'm really looking forward to diving into this conversation today, which is on self-care for binge eating. But before we do get started, I'd love to just learn a little bit more about you and how you came to specialize in binge eating as well.
Yeah, so I am Tony. I'm a registered dietitian from the UK, but I now work online with women all over the world, really. And I specialize particularly in binge eating and helping women kind of end dieting and binge eating cycles. And the reason why I kind of got into this work was maybe a bit of a personal experience with being stuck in the same sort of cycle, as well as when I was working in the NHS, it was kind of a common kind of area that came up that I felt kind of pulled towards. I kind of felt really excited to work with those type of people. So yeah, it's an area that I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, I can really relate to seeing it a lot working in the NHS as well. And I know at the time, well, that's one of the, actually the reasons I went down the path of intuitive eating and supporting for a relationship with food, because at the time it just was coming up a lot and I wasn't equipped to deal with it from my training. So it's definitely something.
I kind of thought, how do I help these people? We had to kind of learn ourselves. Like you said, we didn't learn about the non-diet intuitive eating kind of areas when we were at university. So when I started reading books and learning more about it, I was like, okay, this area is really interesting. And a kind of area that I wanted to kind of do more training in and learn more about.
Yeah, I love that. And maybe we can just start with as well, so people kind of know what we're talking about. What is binge eating, and just how common is it?
Yeah, so binge eating is essentially eating a large amount of food in a short period of time. And there's a difference between overeating and binge eating. And I think overeating is normal kind of part of life. We all overeat at times. So I always think of Christmas Day, around that time we tend to overeat. But when it's binge eating, when there's a kind of a lot of strong feelings like guilt, shame, a lot of clients can feel disgusted about how much they've eaten, and that kind of feeling can linger for days. And I think that is the difference between overeating and binge eating, those kind of strong feelings associated with it. And those feelings essentially impact all aspects of life. They can, like I said, they can drag on for days. They affect your relationships, your work life, your mental health. And the more it happens, the more it impacts your physical health as well.
Yeah, I love the focus on the way it makes us feel and that guilt and shame that comes up as well. And I know I've had multiple clients even in the past say that they've previously tried to reach out for support, say from their GP, and have been told, no, you don't meet criteria for, say, binge eating disorder, or it doesn't meet criteria for a binge. But then what hasn't been considered is the way it's making them feel, this out of control feeling, a lot of guilt and shame. So there's no kind of, we don't have to meet any kind of box for it for to deserve support. So if there's these difficult emotions coming up around food, whether it's considered binge eating, whether it's not, we definitely deserve support with that.
Yeah, and if those feelings around the binge eating is impacting your life, you definitely deserve the support. I think that's one thing that it's an issue within the eating disorder world. It's kind of these eating disorders should fit a box. And in reality, particularly with binge eating, it can affect anyone, any size, any ethnicity, any race, any sexuality, whatever it is, you can be impacted. And I mean, it's probably one of the biggest eating disorders in terms of how common it is. But because of the guilt and shame that's kind of associated with it, a lot of people won't go to the doctors, won't reach out for help. And it's actually estimated that 1 in 50 people could experience binge eating in their life. So it's quite a huge, huge problem.
Yeah. And the guilt and shame that we're made to feel from the messages really don't help us to be able to reach out and keep us in this place of secrecy around it as well, which really isn't fair.
Yeah, it's really not fair. It's really difficult for people that really struggle with binge eating, I think. And the more we talk about it, hopefully the more they kind of resonate with these conversations and they do get support.
Yeah, definitely. And I always just like to kind of add that we're not broken if we experience this. Like we know there's so much research and science behind it that's just not, I guess it doesn't get into the media so much, but there's so much we know about it and there's reasons for it. It's not that we're kind of broken or this is just what we're destined to do. We know there's reasons for it and it's just a part of the human experience. But we also deserve to work through it.
Yeah, definitely. I love that.
Maybe, I guess, thinking about like the reasons that we do it as well, what are maybe some of the triggers that can contribute to someone developing binge eating?
Yeah, and I mean, there's so many reasons why someone could be binge eating. And again, we're not kind of putting people in boxes like this is why you're binge eating, because the reason that you are can be so complex and so different to each person. But I think one of the main ones that I see is dieting and an irregular intake of food, and which is why I kind of work with women who kind of yo-yo diet, because I find that they have such an erratic intake. They're not really got that consistency, and then they're kind of stuck with a binge eating cycle as well. So eating regularly is a really common one that I see. Not the only one, but it's common, as well as kind of poor, that kind of comes into kind of poor body image, like not really liking your body, wanting to diet, trying to restrict food, and then ending up binge eating. And that can be kind of interlinked with the dieting and the eating irregularly. There's also emotions that come into play with it. So stress, tiredness, having a really hard day or hard time in your life, turning to food for comfort is really common. And I think binge eating and emotional eating can be quite similar experiences. And then the last one that I can think of, well, there's a few more I can think of, but the last main one I would say is like a lack of self-care, which is why we kind of picked this topic today. A lot of women that I meet, when they're binge eating, there's not any self-care there. And I also want to point out that self-care is a bit of an icky kind of word, I think. On social media, it's kind of built into this kind of world where we should be having bubble baths and face masks all the time. But in reality, like eating regularly can be self-care, like meal planning.
Yeah.
And making things a bit easier for you, your self-care, setting boundaries, saying no to things, all these will tie into that self-care because you're doing things that make you feel better.
Yeah, definitely. I love that looking at, just exploring, I guess, that eating regularly and eating enough as well is just one of our most basic self-cares that we need.
And I don't know about your experience, but starting there with a lot of my clients and getting that consistent eating actually does a lot in terms of it reduces binge eating massively. It helps them to be able to listen to and hear their body a little bit more in terms of hunger and fullness, and it just lifts them up a little bit, gives them some more energy, makes them feel happier. And I just can't underestimate the power of just eating regularly. It's a really great place to start.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. What I often describe it as well, that there can be this complexity, and there usually is like more of a complexity of reasons why we're binge eating or emotional eating or whatever, kind of whatever we most relate to in terms of calling it. But until we're eating regularly and we're eating enough, we actually don't know what else is causing it, whether it is just our body's hunger drive, or when we're hungry, we're also less able to tune in and explore our emotions and all of this. So whether it's just coming from our hunger, or how much and what else is triggering it, so that regular eating and eating enough is really that first step, as you just mentioned, to usually it does in the majority of cases. I think all cases I've seen, it's reduced the binge eating, but then it gives us that space to actually explore what else is going on as well.
Yeah, definitely. And having that space is really powerful and really helpful in being able to make plans for when it does happen, to be able to identify why it happened and really understand it a little bit more. But when we're hungry, when we're not eating enough, we can't hear that.
Yeah, definitely. And something that I also notice, and I'm sure you notice as well, is just how hard it can actually be to bring in regular eating and eating enough. I'm wondering if you wanted to just touch on, I guess, the messages that we receive in our culture about food, or about maybe binge eating as well, just in why that feels so difficult to just bring in regular eating and eating enough.
Yeah, and as I mentioned about self-care, I think in our work we kind of turn it around a little bit and make self-care feel a bit different. But I think the main message that we get from society is around like restriction. Restriction is good. And I think this is the issue with binge eating, is that a lot of people come to me and they say they need to stop binge eating and sort the binge eating out, when actually it's the restriction, like we've mentioned, that we need to sort out. So I think the fact that our society, we get praised as people when we're eating less, you're doing so well, you've got so much willpower, getting compliments when we lose weight, these sort of things really drive binge eating even more and make the binge eating seem like it's the bad thing, which I think is really, really toxic kind of culture. And we've got to say it's diet culture that kind of does this whole beauty ideal standards that we've been told that we should live up to.
Yeah, absolutely. And diet culture, we know that it's a really oppressive system that has beauty ideals and food ideals and tells us what we should be doing. It drives us away from being able to explore our own body and finding that trust with our body's sensations, such as our hunger sensations, our emotions. And we know that it puts a fear into us of weight as well. So either weight gain or making us feel that we have to lose weight being the primary focus. And it also tells us that food is directly responsible for weight as well, which we know is a lot more complex than that. We know that that's not the case. It's calories in, calories out model. We know that's not true. But when we're getting told that we need to be controlling our weight and food is what's causing that, understandably, binge eating can become a really scary thing. And then bringing in regular eating when someone already feels, oh, but I'm binge eating all of, you know, at this amount of time. So I'm obviously maybe overall, I feel like I'm getting the amount I need. So it can feel really, really scary to bring in extra, what feels like extra food or this regular eating. When there's this fear of eating, quote unquote, too much.
Yeah, it is a really difficult space because, like you said, they feel like they're eating all this food and you're telling me to eat more. My weight's just going to go up is kind of the first primary concern. But in reality, we need to get eating more across the day to kind of work on those binge eatings in the evenings if that's been happening.
Yeah. I think because of the messages we're surrounded by, we often want to say, okay, well, I'll stop binging first and then I can start eating more. But we really need to switch that around. It's the other way around. Your body needs to feel safe in that it's getting enough food, it's getting regular food. So it doesn't need to be driving us to eat in response to these hunger drives or to maybe eat in response to other things going on.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, the compliments that people get, it's a really big thing I hear so much from women that when they lost loads of weight, they got compliments all the time. Then when they gain the weight, they don't get compliments anymore. And going through that is really hard. And it of course, it affects your self-esteem, your confidence, your body image, the way you feel about yourself. And ultimately, that all affects the way you look after yourself in terms of self-care and self-compassion.
Yeah, definitely. And when our culture is so focused on restriction as well, that really impacts the compassion that we have for ourselves and impacts our ability to care for our body.
Yeah, it's so hard, isn't it, for people that are stuck in that diet culture. But you can get out of it. And when you get out of it, you're really surprised at how prominent it is in your life. Like, you see it everywhere. And that's one thing that a lot of my clients and what I realize is, oh my God, okay, like, when you're in it, you're really in it. And it's really hard to see that there's a different approach to stopping binge eating, but there is. And it's so much better when you're out of it.
Completely agree. Just even the messages we're surrounded by that feel so normalized. Things that I notice now, just they stand out to me. I go, oh, that's diet culture, label that, move that away. Whereas I used to not even notice it. It was just something that was these messages around, I don't know, burning calories and these other diet culture messages we have. I just assumed, yeah, I guess that's true, or I guess that's just something that we live with. So it is once you see it, it's really hard to unsee it.
Yeah, it's everywhere, isn't it? It's overwhelmingly everywhere sometimes. And being able to deal with that and, like you said, label it and move away from it and not let it drag you in to that one more diet or one last diet. It's really hard.
Yeah. It's certainly a process to go through to get there. But as you said, it is possible. I think once you get the ball rolling as well, it just becomes kind of builds onto that. But really to get started, especially if our social settings are quite caught up in diet culture and Maybe our healthcare services and all of this as well. It can be hard to step away from that, but it's definitely worth it if it's something that anyone wants to do.
Yeah, and just mentioning about the healthcare system, and think if you do live in a larger body, whenever you go to the doctor, the kind of first thing they'll say to you is losing weight, focusing on your weight, even if the problem sometimes is nothing to do with the weight. And I think that's a really hard experience to go through. And I think having compassion and maybe finding practice or a doctor that doesn't just focus on that is really powerful, or maybe working with someone to kind of set boundaries and make you feel confident when you're in the doctor's office.
Definitely. And it's way too common that a doctor will, or other people as well, I guess just in our life, or other healthcare providers as well, will give out diet advice without firstly knowing anything about the person. So you need to start eating better and moving more without knowing if that person, how that person eats, or if that person is moving. It's just this assumption. And without knowing anything about their eating behaviors. Do they have an eating disorder? Do they have disordered eating? Are they in this cycle of restricting food and then binge eating? Even if any of this is the case, that it's really common that we can just get advice that's, oh, you need to lose weight, which is really, really harmful. It just reinforces the focus on keeping quiet, because we feel like more of a failure, or we're not able to achieve something that we're just told to keep doing.
Yeah, it's so difficult to manage, and yeah, definitely healthcare providers, not just doctors.
So often when we think of wanting to let go of binge eating, we want to stop binge eating. We're often focused on kind of in that moment and trying to maybe avoid food or not use food in that moment. But what can we do outside of binge eating? Because we both know that it actually starts with outside of that moment. What can we do just to support our bodies to maybe reduce the binge eating episodes or the stress that that's causing us?
So as we have mentioned, regular eating is a really good starting point. If you find that you are maybe eating not first thing in the morning, you kind of wait until late morning, early afternoon to kind of have that first meal. I think a really good step is maybe trying to have something within the first 1 2 hours of waking up. And really kind of getting into a habit. A lot of the time, a lot of my clients are in a habit of missing that meal, and they kind of go long periods in the morning. But then also, if you are a binge eater in the evening, having breakfast first thing can be really difficult. So even if it's something little, even if you did binge the night before, starting with breakfast is really important, and then having a lunch and an evening meal. Maybe you might have snacks in between as well. But I think outside of the binge eating, outside of that moment, the regular eating, if you're not doing that, start there is really, I think it's a really, really good step.
Yeah, I think it's really important. The cycles that we often see of binge eating might be things like binge eating in the evenings after maybe a busy day, or just after a full day, or maybe either intentionally or unintentionally, we just haven't eaten regularly in the day. Or it might be things like on weekends when maybe we feel suddenly more free around food, or we don't have the same structure because we've had this tight structure during the week. Or it can also come up in times of emotion as well, maybe when our guard is down from the rules that we're following. So yeah, as you said, letting go of like the rules and just that regular eating in the day through the week, as well as allowing food on the weekend, if that's the cycle, like making sure that food is allowed in the week as well.
For me, when I was stuck, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was really like restrictive carb days, and it was really, when I look back at my photos, because I always take photos of my food, I'm a foodie, when I looked back at my photos recently, like all my meals were like no carbs, and I would have like eggs at breakfast, like boiled eggs, and like carrot sticks and hummus at lunch, and there was no when I look back and think about it, there's a huge reason why I was kind of in my car going to the shop buying sweets and crisps and eating them alone in the car before I went home and had my dinner. And yeah, it's just that midweek when you said it, it's really resonated with me, because then at the weekend it would be free for all. I could eat what I want when I want it. But then Monday it was all about starting again and getting back on track. And which I think, if you're in that cycle, I think it's a really common cycle to be stuck in. Really, really working on your food rules. Like, maybe we need to eat what you ha have what you've eaten at the weekend in the week a little bit more, and kind of spreading them out. And like you said earlier, making your body feel safe around food, regular food that it wants and needs, particularly carbohydrates at the minute. Huge restriction.
Yeah, that really resonated, the talking about, I guess, binging on things like the carbohydrates. I think that's a really common experience. But then that providing this false proof that carbohydrates are something that you can't control yourself around. So you need to control carbohydrates. So then the carbohydrates, like in this example, is what is restricted for maybe the week or the first few days of the week. And then understandably, once we understand what's actually going on in our body, it's really, really normal that our body is going to crave carbohydrates, especially if that's been restricted. But because they've been restricted, we crave them and we feel really urgent and out of control around them. And then it's this proof that, oh, I can't actually control myself. They're bad. They're something maybe I'm addicted to and I need to control them. But when we understand what's going on in our body, carbohydrates are really important for the most important energy for our body. We have specific neurotransmitters that crave carbohydrates if we're not getting enough because of how important they are. Carbohydrates also will support our body to release serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter that supports our body to feel satisfied and feel happy. So understandably, we're going to crave them for that as well if we're not eating enough. There's lots of reasons that we crave them, but because of the diet culture messages that say carbohydrates are bad, we can get into this cycle of false proof that we need to cut them out.
Yeah, and like you said, when you experience binge eating and you binge eat on carbohydrates, you kind of build up that thought that you can't trust yourself around carbohydrates. So what I need to do is restrict them and control them, whether that's measuring or like restricting them completely. Yeah, it's carbs are a really difficult one to manage, and personally it's one that I struggled with as well.
Yeah. And just the rules that you mentioned, stuff like portioning out, like measuring and those kind of behaviors where we're maybe still allowing something in a certain amount, so in maybe moderation or in this set amount, and we're not allowed more than that. And we know that even in that situation, it creates restriction to our brain, restriction in our body. And even then we can still feel out of control around them and still crave them. And especially in moments when maybe we are tired or feeling emotional, and we're just needing that comfort, or our guard feels down from the strict rules that we've got as well.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, like letting go of rules is kind of another thing that which is a really hard thing and a big thing to do. Like living with no rules is really scary, and I think for a lot of people, like especially if there's a lack of trust and a lack of trust with the body, and being able to trust yourself around certain foods, living without rules is really scary. But it takes time, and the work that we do, I'm sure you kind of say the similar thing. It's not We're not rushing through it. We're taking our time, and we're really making sure that we're breaking these rules really slowly, so it's not overwhelming and it's doable. It's not another diet. We're not doing it within 3 months, 3 weeks, whatever the messaging out there is. It's not a quick fix. It takes time.
Yeah. Yep, and it can feel really scary getting started with something like this, letting go of something like rules when that's been, we've got this, had this false proof for so long that we need these rules, and maybe we aren't connected with our body to know how to eat without them. So it can feel very scary just to let go of them and maybe feel like, well, what do I do now? Which is where that support can come in as well. But also knowing that there is a kind of framework that we use. It's obviously flexible and adaptable for each person because everyone's different. No one fits into a box, but we're not just saying, okay, stop doing this and there you go. Like you're going to somehow navigate this. There is a structure to it. And even when it feels maybe the earlier stage, when it feels really messy and out of control, and now I'm just allowing myself to eat and it doesn't feel good, I think just coming back to, okay, this is just a part of the structure and it's not going to be like this forever can be really helpful too.
Yeah, definitely. And then thinking about self-care, as we said earlier, like people who come to us when they're stuck in like dieting and binge eating cycles, their self-care is not there. It's not adequate enough to support them. But that might be because of the messaging around self-care that it doesn't, we don't really, I don't know, the messaging around self-care, as I said, is a bit like, I think self-care is a bit of a word for people that they maybe don't feel that they deserve self-care or that they should be doing self-care. But self-care is the basic stuff, eating regularly, having snacks available to you, planning the first half of the week in terms of food to make it easier for you. So setting a few hours on a Sunday just to make things a little bit easier for you in the week. That is not a diet. And I think meal planning has been really diet cultured. but diet culture doesn't own meal planning. Meal planning is a type of self-care that can be used to support you to make things easier. And I think the work that we do is all about making life a little bit easier, making food less of a stress and a worry and a less of a stress and a worry.
I think meal planning certainly has been co-opted by diet culture, but it really comes down to that intention behind it. If the intention is that you're meal planning so that you don't eat too much, quote unquote too much, or your meal planning so that your portions are all, you know, out, or the types of foods are that you're eating, or it's to stop you eating other types of foods maybe, then yeah, that's diet culture. But if your meal planning is coming from a place of supporting yourself to have the foods available that you know will satisfy you, that you know will make you feel good, so that you know you can fit, say, lunch in or whatever meal it is in the daytime when you don't have time to make food, like that's self-care.
Diet culture has kind of taken it, hasn't it? So I'm really careful to use meal planning, and I kind of use, like, I always introduce it like a flexible meal plan. Like, we write down like meals that we're going to eat, but we're not going to be like Monday I'm eating this, Tuesday I'm eating this, and being specific in terms of how much, when, what times. Like we're just going to write down what meals we have available to us in terms of ease, just to make our life a little bit easier, particularly like at the start of the week when you go back to work and the kids go back to school and you're doing it, this, you're trying to juggle everything. Let's make food a little less of an effort.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with that as well, what you just said is having enough food available. So for most of us, our appetite's not exactly the same every day. We're going to maybe some days a little bit less is going to satisfy us, other days a little bit more, once we're kind of in touch with our body and our satisfaction cues. So just always having either whatever portion you kind of feel like on that day available, or if that's not an option because, you know, you're taking lunch to work or something, then having some snacks available so that there's still something. So there's enough, no matter whether your hunger level is a bit less that day or whether it's a bit more, that there's not restriction there.
Yeah, I mean, you as a dietitian as well, I've always got snacks. I've always got snacks ready. And I've always been like that. Even when I was dieting, but I would When I was dieting, I probably didn't have the snacks available. I would always go to the shop and buy extra when I wanted them, because I tried to restrict snacks. Because again, snacking is a kind of diet culture message that snacking is bad, that we shouldn't snack, we should only have 3 meals a day, quote unquote. And again, like, snacking is a really powerful tool to satisfy you until your next meal, or if you get hungry an hour before your meal. I don't know, like, I used to, 11 o'clock, I used to get hungry. I would look at the clock and think, I can't eat lunch till 11, till 12. So, and I can't snack now because I cut up. Then, like, I'm going to impact my lunch and I'm going to have extra calories for no reason. So I'll just kind of wait for an hour. And that hour, I would constantly think about the food that I'm going to eat. I wouldn't be really focused on my work that I was doing. Like, food would be just in my brain, because that is a sign that I'm hungry. And I think removing that rule, removing those rules, having a snack and then having your lunch maybe at 12, or maybe you might want it at 12:30 or 1, because you've had that snack, and there's no problem with that. There's no kind of set rules, set times that we should be eating. And if you're hungry an hour before your lunch, have a snack, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, and we know that being really, really hungry, so getting beyond that comfortable hunger, does lead to eating sort of more at a faster rate, or missing the fullness cues as well. And that can maybe sometimes feel like binge eating for some people.
Yeah, definitely.
When you mentioned the always having snacks available thing, that certainly I relate to that. I don't like being out, I guess, for too long without having a snack, because I don't like the feeling of being really hungry. I know that I'll just be thinking about food and I won't be able to really like engage in the moment properly. But it also reminded me of being at a restaurant one time and we just ordered food. We didn't really know how long it was going to take. And a friend sitting next to me was feeling really hungry and feeling like she couldn't wait the, I guess, unknown time until the food was available, and turned to me and said, "I know that you've always got snacks. Do you have a snack I could have?" And I firstly love like how kind of in tune with her own body she was. And there wasn't this like, "Oh, we've ordered food, I should wait because that's what we should do." It was like, "No, I can tell that I need food. Like I'm going to be extremely hungry if not." And I also love that she knows that I would always have snacks available.
Yeah, and if you've ever experienced that hangry feeling, like, it is real, and you are a completely different person in that moment. And we want to avoid getting that, like you said, that hungry, because it leads to kind of a more chaotic feeling. And you might not be binge eating, but you can feel like you're binge eating because you're completely numb in that moment because you're so hungry. So avoiding having a snack and avoiding getting that hungry is really, really powerful, and is probably an act of self-care. Like, you've done something that feels good and delays you feeling, not delays you, avoids you getting that hangry. And, oh my God, you don't want to know me when I'm hangry.
Yeah, I think it's not a nice feeling. And if we're used to maybe these extremes, though, like we're used to being an extreme of hunger, and then we're used to being maybe up the higher end of fullness, if we're used to these cycles, sometimes we don't even really notice the difference in us, or we maybe just feel like we're this kind of irritable person when we're not. It's our hunger, or maybe other self-care as well. It's our body needing something, so of course it's going to react like that.
Yeah, like that.
So I guess when we first start working on binge eating as well, firstly, it's something that can happen occasionally. It's fine. Maybe it's just like a natural body process from being too hungry. Maybe it's more just kind of quote unquote overeating, which is a really normal thing. Or maybe we still are binge eating because of other reasons. What can we do in situations where maybe we have just felt like we've eaten with an out of control feeling, or we've eaten more than we wanted to? Is there anything that we can maybe turn to in those moments that might help us?
Yeah, so, I mean, I always kind of explain to my clients when they start working with me that we're not going to be able to stop the binge eating, especially initially, especially if it's so frequent. like our main goal maybe to be reducing the amount of food that we're eating within that moment, or maybe reducing the amount of times it's happening. To stop is a really big, ambiguous kind of goal that might not be realistic for a lot of people. So it's going to happen, and when it happens, I mean, I always introduce a self-soothe list with a lot of my clients, and again, it might be called the self-care list, or I like to use self-soothe because I kind of use it as a way that we're kind of trying to calm down things. And I think after a binge, or after that moment where you might have eaten too much or feel like it is a binge, a self-soothe list can be really helpful to turn to, because it will have a list of things that only you have put together, so it's really unique, that you can turn to in kind of a heat of the moment to kind of avoid what I call like a spiral of thoughts and like self-hate feeling. So it's kind of like a distraction list, things to kind of take your mind off what just happened. I think that list can be really powerful in a lot of situations, in stopping binge eating, but I think after a binge it's really important. So I always make sure that that's one of the first things we put together. Because, yeah, it's really helpful.
Yeah. And it can be hard in the moment to draw on tools that are helpful. So it can be hard when something like binge eating can invoke a stress response, or we might have experienced binge eating because of this like heightened stress response. So what's known as like the fight or flight response. And in that moment, in that stress state, we're not actually in a place to draw on our like rational thoughts and the calm part of our brain that can say, okay, like, what does this mean? And like, what will be helpful now? So having some kind of like list or something that's available to look at, just as to serve that reminder and offer us some tools that are kind of there written down when we're not really able to access those at the time is really helpful.
Yeah, but I would also say, like, when you're in the moment, like pausing and breathing is a really powerful tool. And a lot of, like, I think breathing is really underestimated, especially I kind of recommend box breathing because it's got kind of a structure, like breathe in for four, hold for four, out for four, and hold again for four. Because I think just thinking through that process of box breathing is really, and thinking of a box as you're doing it, really like bring you back into the moment. Yeah, I think then you can kind of think, oh, okay, what's just happened? Why has it happened? And that's part of the process of being able to stop binge eating, is learning why it happened and being able to identify those reasons why. It's really, really, really helpful.
Yeah. And we know that breathing, especially focusing on like those deep breaths and focusing on lengthening the breath, and the exhale especially, does bring us back to
yeah,
a calmer nervous system state. But I also love the structure of the box breathing you just mentioned, because again, in that moment, it's hard to say like, okay, just take deep breaths or something. So having like that structure and focus to occupy like our mind in that way would be really helpful as well.
Yeah. And a lot of the time that kind of breathing goes on to my clients' like list, self-soothe list, because it can be really, really helpful. But I always explain things. So things kind of go onto the self-soothe list is a lot of the time things that you can keep your brain busy and your hands busy. And so you might love drawing or doing puzzles, or even just listening to a podcast and going for a walk can be really helpful. So yeah, it's a list that's unique to you. There's not one list that's the same. And a lot of my clients, we actually realize that they've got so many hobbies that they love doing that they don't do anymore. And again, this comes into self-care, that doing things that you enjoy. So playing the piano, drawing, painting, whatever it is you really love, reading, can be really, bringing those things back into your life. A lot of the time they stop doing, a lot of my clients don't do the things that they love anymore. So I really like doing that list because it actually makes, oh, you, I didn't know that you like doing baking and you don't do that anymore because your kind of worries about food. So helping them to get those things back into their life is so, so nice.
I love that. And it just really shows that how much experiencing like stressful eating experiences like binge eating can really take away from us, and that going, I guess, getting support with recovery from binge eating or just other really stressful and difficult eating experiences, it doesn't just help with the stress in the moment of eating. It really helps with opening up our lives again, like from the headspace, and maybe just reminding ourselves of the different things that we do enjoy as well.
Yeah, definitely. It does take a lot from your life, and food becomes the main worry, the main concern. And that's all that you can think about all the time when you're really stuck in it. So you get your life back, you really do.
Yeah, that's so lovely. Do you have anything else that you want to share with the listeners about binge eating or recovery from binge eating?
Yeah, probably my main point is, you deserve to get the support that you need, no matter where you are in terms of you binge eating, whether it's just started or maybe it's you've been struggling with it for a long time. You deserve to kind of get your life back, like we said, and make food less stressful.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, I think this has been really, really helpful. I've really liked this conversation, and there's been so many helpful tips that you've shared as well for people to maybe get started or just understand a bit more about their experiences as well, which is powerful. If anyone wants to find you and learn more, where can they go to find you?
Yeah, so I'm mainly on Instagram as the.binge.dietitian. Or my website is www.thebingedietitian.com. But yeah, I'm on Instagram every day. You'll find me mainly on there.
Lovely. And I will link to those in the show notes as well.
Perfect.
Thanks, Tony. It's been so nice to speak today.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's been so lovely to share this episode with you today. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating or share with your community and help us reach more people who would benefit. And I would love for you to visit today's guest with the link they shared. If you do relate to this or other stressful, out of control eating experiences, I have a brand new online course called the Anti-Diet Guide to Overcoming Emotional Eating, which provides a step-by-step guide for you to tackle out-of-control and stressful eating through understanding and feeling in control of your stress responses and emotional states, improving your relationship with food, and developing body connection and acceptance. So I will link to that in the show notes. See you next time.